And I was forced to think about what I might have to take to the second-hand shop. Inevitably, my collection of LPs were prime candidates, because in all the years we'd lived there, I knew that I hadn't played a single one. I only hesitated over my very first ever LP, a much-loved recording of Beethoven's Violin Concerto, a present from my father when I turned 14. Initially, I thought I'd hang on to that one. But then another train of thought developed, which I found rather helpful. Surely this scratched and battered LP was not really what my father had given me all those years ago. He was really inviting me to share in his love of music, a love he talked about when he described driving across Europe to go to the opera in Italy as a young man, and which he didn't, and which he endlessly put into practice in the concerts we went to as a family. So the record wasn't the real gift. The real gift was his love of music awakening my own. And that was what I really treasured. It's interesting that when John, in his Gospels, describes the miracles of Jesus, he doesn't actually use the word that we normally render as miracles, in spite of what Cranmer put in the Book of Common Prayer. He doesn't use the word dunamis, which means acts of power. John repeatedly uses a different word, the word semion, which means sign, as he does in his account of this first miracle of Jesus at the marriage of Canaan. We should, of course, be alert to the fact that something transformational is going to happen in this account, because John tells us that it begins on the third day. And in John, no word is wasted, and that inevitably makes us think of another third day. And the mother of Jesus imploring him to do something when it's clear that the wine has run out. And so after some persuasion, Jesus tells the steward to refill the stone water jars, which had been used for the guests to purify themselves as they arrived. Throughout his ministry, Jesus treads the most tricky of lines between wanting to do everything he can to demonstrate the reality of God's love, the healing and the new life that is there for all those who open themselves to that love, but at the same time, understanding the risk that people will see him as a wonder worker or an entertainer. They'll get caught up on the spectacle and miss the deeper realities of the love that he is offering, and indeed the life-changing demands that makes on us all. And so right from the beginning of his ministry in the wilderness, Jesus refuses to use his powers to create a spectacle. He doesn't want to be followed because he's a wonder worker. He wants to be followed because of the relationship with God he makes possible. So he's often quite reluctant to work miracles, and sometimes only seems to do so out of compassion for the person in front of him. And of all the gospel writers, John makes this the clearest. The miracles that John describes are actually very few, carefully chosen, and usually accompanied by extensive teaching to illustrate their significance. As I say, John calls these acts signs. He doesn't want people to become fixated on the outward sign. He wants them to see the deeper reality to which it points. And the marriage of Canaan is not to be remembered for the delicious wine served towards the end of this celebration meal, nor for one who can work such wonders. Canaan is to be remembered because of the transforming reality of God's love. So much can be said about the details of this story. We have Jesus reusing the stone jars, which had served for the Jewish rites of purification. as if illustrating that something completely new is available here, transforming the old. We have Mary, just as she obeyed when the angel told her that she was to be the mother of the Son of God, saying to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you," pointing to the deep obedience which is our response to this gospel. We have a great feast pointing to the Eucharist, which Jesus will inaugurate at the Last Supper, and which he gives us to sustain us as we seek to grow and live in God's love. But surely what lies at the heart of this great wonder is the deepest truth of all, that there isn't just one bridegroom at this feast, but that Jesus himself is there as the real bridegroom, because he is the one who in his own life is uniting us to the life of God, inaugurating a new way of living, God with his people, preparing us all for the eternal banquet of God's love. All the signs in John's gospel point in the end to the reality of God's love, which is never shown so completely or fully as on the cross, when God fully embraces our fragility and comes alongside us, and when by his rising again shows us that in him love and forgiveness and hope will always triumph over hatred and bitterness and despair. Interestingly, God doesn't call this raising of Christ from the dead a sign. Perhaps because that greatest of all miracles, the raising of Jesus from the dead, isn't a sign of anything. It is the reality of God's love, to which the marriage of Canaan and all the other signs point. The reality that God is with us in the darkest moments and will lead us to the fullness of life and transform our lives into the fullness of his joy and peace. Amen.